Okay. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to deal with Shavasa Batamos, the 3 weeks, the 9 days, even though it's a week early. Okay. Are we ready? There's no Tanakhians missing, are there? Are you doing something right now?
No, for the
Akbar. Huh? The Akbar. Just say it. All right. The Mishnah in Tanit, Perek Dalet, gives 5 reasons why we fast on Yud Zayin B'Tamuz. Okay. The first is that it's the day that the Luchot were broken. Okay, if you take Zayin Sivan, which is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu went up, plus 40, the next day is Yud Zayin Tamuz, which was the day when he saw the Egel HaZahav, he smashed the Luchot, and later on the Egel HaZahav, etc. That's one reason for mourning or for need for tshuva on Yud Zayin Tamuz. Another reason the Mishnah gives is Batla Korban Tamid. Okay, according to the Rambam, this is referring to the Korban Tamid in the Bayit Rishon. Although there are some Agadotot that seem to describe something happened in Bayit Sheni about the time that the Korban Tamid was bottled. What the Rambam says is talking about the Bayit Rishon, it was on Yud Zayin Tamuz. The third thing mentioned in the Mishnah is Nefretzu Chomot Ha'ir, that the walls of the city of Yerushalayim were breached. Okay, and this definitely happened in Bayit Sheni, because in Bayit Rishon it's described in Yirmiyah, Perek Nun Bet, that happened on Tet B'Tamuz. Okay, so Yud Zayin Tamuz is referring to Nefutzu Chomari is referring to the second Bayit. Fourth thing mentioned is that Achostrumus burned the Sefer Torah. Right, you've heard of that? Okay, who's Achostrumus? So the answer is nobody knows. Okay? Nobody really knows who Achostrumus is. It's described in the Gemara, his name is Achostrumus. But it's just hard to match up with someone that actually lived at that time. In Josephus, he mentions the fact that 16 years before the Great Revolt, okay, and the Churban Bayit Sheni, one of the nobles was taking a trip from Yerushalayim to Lod, and he was highwayed around Beit Choron, and his name was Stephanus. He went and made a big stink, and as a result, Chaylim went into the nearest city, which was Beit Choron, and burnt the Sefer Torah. And that started a mini intifada, not quite the Great Revolt. And in order to stop that intifada, Josephus explains that the ruler, whose name was Kamdus, had to actually hang the soldier that burnt the Sefer Torah in order to calm the Jews down. So the striking similarity is, first of all, we never heard about Achostrumus. Stephanus might be Achostrumus. It's describing a burning of a Sefer Torah, and it seems to be, you know, fit into the pattern of these 5 things that are mentioned, some of these things that are mentioned in the Mishnah, and the common denominator of all of them is that these are precursors to the ultimate destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, obviously, we're not talking about breaking the Luchot, but the other things are all precursors, in other words, indications that the Churban HaBayis was on its way. Another thing mentioned in the Mishnah is that Hemidu Pesel B'Migdash. Some want to say that it's the same Achostrumus that put a Pesel in Migdash. It's possible. The Pashtut we're talking about by Cheney. Although there is a Yerushalmi that says that it's referring to the Tzelem of Menashe that was put in the Bayit Rishon. Okay. In any case, the common denominator of all these things is that they're precursors to ultimately to the Churban HaBayit. All right, now we get on to the Minhagim of the 9 days. Okay, quickly I'll go over the list. The list is Nesiat Nashim, meaning weddings.
Did you mean 3 weeks? Did you mean 3 weeks?
I said 9 days.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I meant 3 weeks. Okay? 3 weeks. Okay, 3 weeks meaning starting from Yud Zayin Tammuz. Okay? Nesiat Nashim, weddings, Tisporet, okay, haircuts, Shachiyanu, we'll speak about. Okay? And Inyanim of Sakana, which we'll also talk about. Okay? Those are the topics. So the first topic is weddings. A wedding, the minhag is not to make weddings during the 3 weeks after Yud Zayin Tammuz. An engagement is okay as long as you don't make a su'uda and you don't have music. Okay? And in truth, any type of su'udat mureyut or any type of celebration, misibot, are asur during this period. Okay? Asur. Asur. We don't do those things. Just like it's asur to make a wedding, it's asur to make a type of banquet, a type of social event of any kind. Yeah. Okay. Now, on top of that, we don't listen to music during that time, this period of time. The reason being is that music was one of the central aspects of the Beis HaMikdash. And the modern day Achronim, obviously, you know, it only became an issue once we could record music, and recorded music is really not that old. But Moshe Feinstein, Rav Vad Yosef, the Minchat Yitzchak, all paskin that we don't listen to music during that time. It doesn't make a difference if it's live. It doesn't make a difference if it's recorded. It doesn't make a difference if it's happy. It doesn't make a difference if it's sad. We don't listen to music during the 3 weeks. Now, what are the heterim? The heterim are, number one, if a person's practicing a musician, he's able to practice until Rosh Chodesh Av. Number two, Rav Vad Yosef says that if it's for a Suras Mitzvah, okay, like a Milah, Pidyon HaBen, a Siyum, a Bar Mitzvah, one could be Mekil, although other Achronim disagree with that, but Rav Vad Yosef is Mekil. Thirdly, Rav Lichtenstein is matir using music for functional purposes. Okay? We're not talking about getting hanafa in music, we're using it for functional purposes. Functional purposes, as an example, aerobic exercises that are often done in groups with music, in order that everybody jump up and down at the same time, so that would be okay. Or if a person is, let's say, driving late at night and he wants to put some heavy metal on in order to jangle his nerves and keep him awake, so that's using it for functional purposes. Okay? If you're a galley, if you're a slave rowing on a slave galley and you want to make sure that all the slaves row together, so again, you could use the music for functional purposes. Yeah?
Would not practicing musician be under that? Would practicing musician, wouldn't that be functional to play with music? So, we're looking at more makeup. Then he said you could do a passage for the job too.
No, I don't know him relating to the issue of practicing. I've seen other posts him saying they want to practice until Rosh Chodesh.
That's specifically functional in relation to drawing. I know you're supposed to play with music.
Well, you could ask him yourself what he thinks. Any other questions?
Is the music thing an extension of wedding?
I also just want to say for in Halichot Shlomo that Shlomo Zalman Orbach also allowed this functional type of thing. Now, again, I don't think that means that you shouldn't go to the dentist during that time because he's playing dentist music. I don't think that's an issue. You don't think that if you're on the bus you have to throw yourself out the nearest window or get off at the next stop. You know, you have to put things in proportion. But you're not supposed to initiate on your own, you know, listening to music. Yes, what's your question?
Is music an extension of wedding?
Yes. It is indeed an extension of wedding.
So, wedding is a Suras Mitzvah. Or probably it's someone thinks that it is.
Nah, don't stop making those equations. It's not. In other words, provide you safe allows music for Suras Mitzvah, except not for weddings.
Okay.
As an outgrowth of the Suras Mitzvah. Yeah.
Is it in giggling like parties is a problem if it's a party even without music party?
No, so you can make an engagement if you don't have music there, and you don't have a suda. You know, having some dips, that's okay, but you don't have a suda. Okay? All right. Next. Here, yes?
Would the functional purpose be waking the kids at the camp or not?
Yeah.
Could it?
Yeah. Okay. Yes?
With the convenient part, the suda thing, even if like, they're not, you're having, like, say, food, like, what defines a suda? Like, the fact that...
Bread. Bread defines a suda.
Because you can have bread, if you have, and the second question would be about the party. So you're allowed to have parties, but you're not allowed to have, even like suda, the whole point of the suda, the party, isn't that like, the problem with it?
Again, you're not having music, and you're not having a suda, and therefore, it's not considered the same issue. Okay. Look, there is a minhag in America not to go to movies during the 3 weeks, and that also is a carryover of public socializing, and that has to do with the fact that Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal felt that the 3 week period is parallel to the period of Yud Bechodesh. A person who's an avelut for either his father or his mother has a period of avelut of Yud Bet Chodesh, and during that time, such a person doesn't participate in public socializing. You know, like going to big, you know, social events. And there was a time, I don't know what the movies today is necessarily that, but that's the minhag. It developed from the fact that once movies going to the theater was considered like a social event, so much so that people used to like get dressed up in tuxedos and gowns in order to go to the theater. And I think the carryover of that is that the minhag of not to go to movies. Alright, next, talking about hair cutting during this period. We don't take a haircut from Yud Zion, okay, meaning the period of 3 weeks. The hacker of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal that I mentioned before when I spoke about Sphir also applies. He applied it during this period as well. In other words, he felt that since the period until Rosh Chodesh at least was parallel to Yud Bet Chodesh, and Yud Bet Chodesh had a din of Ashi Yigar Bo Chaveiro, meaning when a person is in Ovelut and his friend comes up and says, your hair looks disgusting, looks horrible, get a haircut. So at which point that person would be able to take a haircut, and Soloveitchik felt that Tiklachat has a din of Yigar Bo Chaveiro every other day or every day basically, and that's why he allowed it until Rosh Chodesh. Rav Lichtenstein, as I mentioned, follows Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal that during Sfira would say we do it for Erev Shabbos, but during the 3 weeks is seen as a much more chamor period than Sfira, and Rav Lichtenstein does not shave even the Chomer Shabbos for the entire 3 weeks. Okay, he did say, however, you know, if people for business reasons or whatever, he once mentioned that Yeshon Amin the Smoch, and indeed the Mishnah Berurah says that if it's a makom hefseg, that a person feels he's going to lose from his business or whatever, unless he shaves or takes a haircut, that he's allowed to until Rosh Chodesh, according to the Mishnah Berurah. There's a discussion in the Rishonim and later on in Achronim whether fingernail cutting is the same on category as haircuts. The Magen Avraham, says it's mutter, that fingernail cutting is not the same din as tesporet, while the Taz feels that it's osur. Okay, just like the klacha. The Mishnah Berurah says l'chavad Shabbos, again during the 3 weeks until Rosh Chodesh, it would be mutter for a person to cut his nails l'chavad Shabbos. Questions so far? Yes.
This is actually a question on music. Like, I always hear that you can listen to a cappella music. Is there a source for that?
There are those that are mafner on a cappella. I personally think that since there is no gezeira against singing per se at all during any of the periods, I think that you could be mako on a cappella. Even though it's recorded, I think you could be mako. But there are those that say you shouldn't listen to a cappella either. Okay. Shechiyana is a very curious din because it would seem as though the Shulchan Aruch somehow dug it out of nowhere and says that it's also to make a Shechiyanu from Yud Zayin Tammuz. Okay, that's how the Shulchan Aruch says. The Gra basically calls him on that and says he doesn't understand what the makor is. And the Gra felt it was meikar din mutar to make a shachianu during the entire period of time, during the entire 3 weeks. Okay, the Mishnah Brura is matir to make a shachianu on Shabbat until Rosh Chodesh. Kind of like a compromise between the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra. Magen Avraham and Mishnah Brura, from that point of the Shachianu, go on a step further and say, and therefore, buying kalim that normally you would make a Shachianu for would be prohibited, because on the act of buying you really chayv nikra did not on the act of using it or wearing it, and therefore one should refrain from buying things like a suit or some other type of power tool or something that, you know, that he rarely buys and gives him a lot of simcha, and that he normally would make a Shachianu on. Nowadays, I don't think that people become overjoyed over shirts or pants simply because we're so wealthy and affluent in our society, and that wouldn't require Shachianu. And therefore, my opinion, it's not a problem to buy clothes that wouldn't be Mechayev Shachianu. Okay? Rav Lichtenstein mentions that if a person buys a new suit, a person could buy a new suit. In other words, again, being somewhat a little bit on the gra, being mashma on the Shulchan Aruch in that not to wear the new suit. And since our minog is that we make a shachianu when we wear it, not when we buy it, the Lichtenstein says you could buy it during the 3 weeks until Rosh Chodesh. I'll get to Rosh Chodesh in a moment, and wear it only on Shabbat, and then you make your shachianu. Okay. While on the other hand, the Magen Avraham Mishnah Brura say no, you should refrain from buying clothes that were mechayev shachianu from Yud Zayin. Yes. Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Shlito. No. The Mishnah Shabbat says you're allowed to make a Shachian on Shabbos, but the Mishnah Shabbat would not allow you to buy a suit.
So only if you happen to have something you bought earlier that would make a Shachian?
Yeah, or if, let's say, you discover a new fruit or something like that, you'd be able to make a Shachian on Shabbos according to the Mishnah Shabbat. Okay. The last category of the three weeks, at least the first part of the 3 weeks, is a category of sakana, danger. Shulchan Aruch records the halacha that it is a minhag or nohagin not to strike your children or your talmidim after your Zayin Tammuz. Okay, so I have until your Zayin Tammuz to do whatever I need to do to you guys, but after the time, the minhag is not to do that because of sakana. In other words, you just don't take risks because it's seen as a dangerous time. It's a dangerous period for Klal Yisrael, I guess, and therefore a dangerous period for individuals. And a lot of unfortunate things have happened during this period of time. Rabbi Yoshev, you should have Rafur Shlema, also mentions that a person shouldn't take stam tiulim during this period, during the 3 weeks. In other words, if there's no just stam as leisure, you shouldn't be looking to take leisure because of the inyan of sakana. And people ask me, well, what about, you know, airplane flights during the 3 weeks or during the 9 days? In my opinion, in other words, if it's an issue, if everything's even, maybe you should avoid it. But if there's some place that you specifically have to be, or if you're saving money, or it's going to make your parents happy, I think any of those reasons are enough to allow going on a flight. Okay, questions so far? Yes.
Are you allowed
the whole time.
Are you allowed showering on it the fast day? Your Zayin Tammuz in particular?
Mikra din, you are allowed to shower on a fast day. The Mishnah Brura, I think, quotes some of them that say that perhaps it's better not to. But Mikra din, you can. Yeah. I'm going to get to it. That's the next topic, the 9 days. Yeah.
I don't know if this is such a specific question, but in general, I know it's hard sometimes with summer camps, like it's like summer, like it's so much fun. Like when the 3 weeks come every year, like from the where you think show the kids.
To what?
To show the kids that it is also a set time. So do you think that, like, you think camps do a,
I'm not a rabbi of a camp. There are a lot of different considerations of education, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure that people who run the camps ask a post, they can post tells them what to do. I don't think that's your concern. If you work in a camp, you know, that they decide to do this, that, or the other thing, I don't think that that's an issue. Yeah.
Superstitious to say that bad things happen during this time, so you should avoid any...
Superstition. Can you define superstition for me?
What makes that kind of...
Can you define superstition for me? Do you have, like, a dictionary there in your...
Having a showing your belief in superstition.
Think on the next thing.
A widely held but unjustified belief in supernatural causation leading to certain consequences of an action or event or a practice based on such a belief.
Okay, so this is clearly not superstitious because it's justified. It is supernatural, but we believe in the supernatural. And it's justified.
What's the
justification? Yeah, the history, the different events that seem to have content would be lined up with this period. It doesn't just stop with the things that are mentioned in the Mishnah and Tanakh. I mean, all kinds of bad things happen during that time.
The Holocaust happened during
the period. I don't know. You can make a statistical study and see whether it's a greater... greater amount. The Gemara mentions that you should also try to reschedule any court appearances because, you know, push it towards Adar, because Adar is a lucky time for Jews, and keep it away from the first part of Av, which is not a happy time for Jews. I don't think it's superstitious. You know, it's brought down the halacha. I don't think it's superstitious. I'll tell you further. Even if you didn't believe in a unlucky time, even if you didn't believe in it, and I think you have the right not to believe in an unlucky time, and you could be completely, you know, rational about it, it would still make sense to do it out of a recognition of things that bad things that happened during that time. Now, it's not to refrain from hitting your kid because, oh, I might maim him, but I should realize that, you know, it's a time when bad things happen, I should be careful. Not because I'm worried about maiming him, but in recognition.
Does the Rambam bring down the din of Sakana?
Of superstition?
Sakana in particular.
Of Sakana... I don't think so. But what does that mean?
I don't know. Sometimes, like, for instance, by Nitiyat HaDayim, Rambam doesn't bring down the Ruach HaRaz. Sometimes he ignores the superstitious parts of the Quran.
Right. Yes. What?
It's
like Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. Okay. Anyways. Now we get to the period of the 9 days. From Rosh Chodesh, right, Av. Okay, and by the way, are there any Sfarim here in the audience? Sfarim? None? Okay, yeah. No, Sfarim are more makel from some of these minhagim that I mentioned until now, and they don't start from Yud Zayin, but they start from from Rosh Chodesh Av. And then the second period of mourning, or more chomer period, is Shua Shachalma. In any case, for Ashkenazim, these things start on Rosh Chodesh. One of the things that's mentioned in the Rishonim, in early poskim, is to refrain, to try to ratchet down business. In other words, limit masav and matan, although most poskim say that Bizman Hazeh, we're not nohag like that at all. In other words, we don't ratchet down business during that time. But what is brought l'halacha is we don't do a binyan shel simcha from Rosh Chodesh. A binyan shel simcha, you know, was mentioned in the Gemara, is like building a special honeymoon cottage, which is basically a type of construction that's purely luxury construction. Something that's not really needed is purely luxury. Okay, a person should therefore refrain from a type of construction that's purely luxury. If a person's building a house because he doesn't have a house to live in, that's not luxury. Okay, if a person's, you know, has some functional need to build something, not like just I stop feel like redoing my kitchen, then it's okay. But stop, I'm redoing my kitchen shouldn't not be scheduled for the 9 days at all. Rav Moshe Feinstein adds on something like wallpapering or painting. Again, if it's for aesthetic purposes, should not be done during the 9 days. if there is a hefsed mamon involved, as an example, you contracted with someone, you weren't aware of when it fell out, and you already have a contract there, and it's going to cause a loss if you breach the contract, or whatever the situation, anytime there's a hefsed mamon involved, then a person is allowed to be made to, because you know his motivation is not simply simcha, and therefore it would be okay. Included in this also is netiya shel simcha, and some want to include netiya shel simcha to be type again aesthetic gardening. Now, it's not necessarily maintaining what you have, but to say planting new shrubbery or what have you. Okay, that's masav matan. The second category during the 9 days is a category of kibus, of laundry. Now laundry, it's important that you understand, breaks up into two separate categories. One is the act of laundry, and the other one is wearing freshly laundered clothes. And they're both also during the 9 days. In other words, a person can't do laundry during the 9 days, even if he doesn't have any plans of wearing those clothes during the 9 days. And the flip of that is also true. A person can't wear freshly laundered clothes even if they weren't washed during the 9 days. Okay. Included in the act of laundering is included in that is sheets, pillowcases, towels, tablecloths. You're not allowed to launder during the 9 days. A person also should not make new clothes during the 9 days. Okay, if you know anybody crochet kippa here, kippa makers in the room? Everyone wants to admit it. Okay, let's say you have a friend who makes kippa, right? You should tell them that they should not be doing it during the 9 days. Okay, you don't make new clothes. You're allowed to fix old clothes. If a button falls off or a seam opens up or something like that, you're allowed to fix old clothes during the 9 days, but you shouldn't make new clothes during the 9 days. Any part, beginning, finishing, any part. The wearing, okay, of new clothes, as I said, is a separate issue. Includes not only freshly laundered clothes, but also new clothes. The Orach HaShulchan and Rabbi Yoshev and Rabbi Pinchas Feinberg all happily exclude underwear from this restriction. Freshly laundered underwear, according to them, is mutter. But Moshe Feinstein says a person should really try to wear, try underwear before, but if he didn't, then you could wear freshly laundered underwear as well.
How long do you have to try something on?
Approximately 13 and a half minutes. Just joking. People just make it up. Yeah. They, no one really knows. You just make it up. In other words, once it's no longer freshly laundered. Whatever for you is not no longer freshly laundered. If it takes, 5 minutes, if it takes, a few seconds, as long as it's no longer considered freshly laundered, it's okay. You try it on. Okay, so for many years I made fun of that, to throw on the floor and stamp on it, because I thought that was like the most ridiculous thing in the world. But then someone showed it to me in some safer, so I stopped making fun of it. Another etza would be to give it to your Sephardi friend to wear, because for him, it only starts in Shua Shechalba. Okay, so if he wears that for a few seconds, that would make it not freshly laundered. Yes?
Disrespectful
to the clothing? There's no need. You don't have to show any respect for any clothing other than the Gushi t-shirt, maybe. If it deserves respect. Some years it deserves respect, some years it doesn't.
I felt like that Gushi t-shirt that would have a lot of cutting and having a bag of shit.
I don't think stepping on clothes is an issue, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, that is a good raya that one should show respect to clothing. I accept that. That's a good point. Yes? Laundering? No. 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 Maybe when you heard about bathing, maybe you heard a difference between hot and cold. Anyways, right. Let's say a person forgot to try on all his clothes before Rosh Chodesh. What do you do on Shabbat? I said one possibility is give it to your Sephardi friend. Another possibility is to wear it on Shabbat, but it can only be clothes that you normally would wear on Shabbat. Because if it's clothes that you don't normally wear on Shabbat, it's a problem of hachana. That's all. But in any case, Shabbat, that falls out during the 9 days, one should not wear new clothes in any case. It shouldn't be new. It could be freshly laundered, but not new. What other heterim are there? It's mutter to give a non-Jew clothes before the 9 days if he has enough time to wash the clothes before, even if he ends up washing them on the 9 days. Okay. If a person finds himself in a situation where he has absolutely nothing to wear, and he just fell into a mud pond, and he just had nothing to wear besides the clothes that are all muddy, so then it would be mutter for him to wash only the clothes that he needs, meaning only one pair of clothes, and he should be doing it b'tzina, and he can get away with that. Children's clothing that are constantly being soiled, a person is allowed to wash b'tzina. Okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that polishing shoes has nothing to do with laundry and it's mutter. And also, hefsed mamon is an example. If you get a spot on clothing and if you don't wash it right, you know, right away or quickly, the spot might set, then you're allowed to clean it. Also, what's mutter is spot cleaning. In other words, if you get a spot that you're not afraid is going to set, but you're allowed to wash just that spot off, it's not considered part laundry until you wash like the whole baggage. So washing one section of the baguette is not really a problem. Yes?
Two questions. Are undershirts under the same category as underwear?
Yes.
Okay.
Underwear. You got your undershirt and your pants. General underwear.
Right here. Okay. Number two, if it's mutter to launder just one spot, take a clean spot, why is that prohibited on Shabbat?
Why is it what?
Prohibited on Shabbat to do the same thing.
No. Separate, the two separate points. The issue of malabein or kibbutz and Shabbat, that's, you know, whatever, even the smallest amount is basically a shear. Here, this gazero, the union of simcha, etc., has to do with an entire beggar. To wash off one little spot is not really, you know, doing anything about the availability. Yes?
And when you spoke about pre-worn clothing for underwear, you said just put it on for a couple seconds. What would be... Would there
underwear?
Be,
I didn't speak about underwear.
Oh, underwear is allowed to be French.
According to most of the French, she said it's preferable to wear, but according to all these others, it's okay not to.
Okay, so when you said pre-wear, then like a second, 2 seconds, and then it's all made up, that was with regards to all clothing.
No, I said whenever a person feels that that's no longer laundry. I don't think that there's an objective amount.
It's no longer laundry?
In other words, when you feel that it's no longer fresh because you wore it.
That'd be to the point where you're ready to put it in the laundry,
no? I wouldn't put on a shirt for like 10 seconds and take it off. I would put on a shirt. I'm just talking about personally. I'm not telling you this is the halacha. Personally, I would put on a shirt, wear it for 5 minutes, to walk around, do something, and then go take it off. You know. Yeah, George.
Could you get a non-Jew to wash clothes during 9 days and then get them and tell them to
point to something? No, you can't ask a non-Jew to wash clothes for you during the 9 days.
Could you ask them beforehand?
Yes, if he has time to do it before. But you can't ask him to do it on the 9 days. You can ask him, give it to him before the 9 days if he had enough time, half a day, whatever it was, to do the laundry. Even if he ends up doing it on the 9 days, he chose to do that. But you can't tell a guy to wash your clothes during the 9 days. You shouldn't do that. If it's freshly laundered, you could ask a guy to wear it for you.
Even if it's not through any
direct
commodity,
what?
I say clean always comes around a certain day of the week and does does wash it.
Shouldn't be done during the 9 days. Unless the guy wears it for you. Wash this and then wear it for you. Wash it around. Okay. Now we get on to basar and yayin. The reason why we refrain from eating meat, drinking wine during the 9 days is because it's zechel korbanos and nisuch hayayin, and also ein simcha el basar v'yayin. Okay, the minog is not to eat basar, but also not to eat bisari things. In other words, something like a chicken soup, it doesn't really have meat in it, just soup in itself. Meikar din would be mutter to have during the 9 days, but the minhag developed not to have anything that's considered bisari. You could have food that was cooked in a fleshic pot. That's not a problem. Okay. Now also meikar din minhag was only on wine, but the Shulchan Aruch said, I mean, the din was only on wine, but the minhag expanded to grape juice as well, according to the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Now, what are the heterim for basar and yayin? So, obviously, the most famous heter is a surat mitzvah, a bris milah, a pidyon haben, or making a siyum. What defines a siyum? It could be a finishing up a mesech in Gemara. It could be finishing a seder in Mishnayot. Mishnayot has to be a whole seder. It could be an entire sefer in Tanakh if you learned that sefer bi'iyun, not just to read it through, but to learn bi'iyun. Okay, a person should not speed up his learning or retard the rate of his learning in order that it should fall out, the seam should fall out during the 9 days. Rav Moshe Feinstein points out, other Achronim point out also, that you should not make a seam on Zayin or Chet Ba'av. Chet Ba'av, obviously, it's Erev Tisha B'Av, but even Zayin Ba'av, you should not make a seam, and in other words, to be matir meat. Now, if you make a siyum during the 9 days, who are you allowed to invite? So I'm telling you according to the Mishnah Berurah, which is the most makel of the Shitot. He says until Shavua Shachal Bo, the definition of Shavua Shachal Bo is the week that Tisha B'Av falls out in. So Tisha B'Av falls out on a Wednesday, so Shavua Shachal Bo starts on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's Shavua Shachal Bo. Before that, it's not considered Shavua Shachal Bo, it's just from Rosh Chodesh. So if you're making a siyum before Shavua Shachal Bo, so you can invite your relatives, and you can invite the friends that you normally would have invited to a regular siyum. Okay? This, by the way, really excludes situations in camps. There's some camps where they always have someone making a siyum during the 9 days, so the whole camp could have meat. In my opinion, that's problematic, unless, not during the 9 days, the camp would make a big shindig every time someone makes a siyum and serve meat. Okay, but and then showing that there's this camaraderie and that you're everybody's friends and you would invite those people normally if you see them. But just to like use a siyum and invite people that are not your friends, that's not permitted. There's Achoran talk about that. You invite your relatives and friends that you normally would have invited. If you want to make a siyum on Shavua Shachal Bo, in the middle of Shavua Shachal Bo, you then invite your relatives and 10 friends, if you have 10 friends. Okay, that's the limit. Another heter besides the seal.
What's the basis of that stuff? What's the logic there?
Logic of what?
Meaning, relative wife, relative mother.
Because relatives, you normally invite relatives to a seal.
Meaning, who cares if they have the same blood as me? I mean, what if you have a second cousin you've never spoken to? They're friends who you're more close with than your parents.
The assumption is that you do have a relationship with your relatives. The Yotzei Dofen, that there's some kind of a feud in the family, is not.
No, but how close of a relative do they need to be?
A relative.
Jack?
Yes.
So, like this year, when Tishba falls on Shabbos, that's moved to Sunday, so when's the Shavua Shachal Bo?
Shavua Shachal Bo, I'll get to it when I get to the Hilchos Tishba book. But, there are two, it's a machlokes Rishonim, where the Shavua Shachal Bo is the week before. Or there's no Shavua Shachal Bo. Okay. Anyways, Shabbat is another heter. I mean, you know, even though Shabbat falls out during the 9 days, we eat meat and we drink wine during Shabbat. Even Tosefet Shabbat, if you want to bring Shabbos early or let it out late, you're allowed to have meat and wine during that time. For Havdalah, it's an interesting challenge because Havdalah generally is after Shabbat. So anyway, the Shulchan Aruch holds Mi'ikra Din, it's better to drink wine for Abdallah in a normal way. The Ramah says it's better to find a kid that has gotten to the age of Chinuch, meaning Mechanechim for a Bracha, but on the other hand, doesn't appreciate a Veil of Yerushalayim, and tell him, you're going to drink the wine or the grape juice after Abdallah.
How much do you need to drink, though?
Pardon me?
Do you need to drink anything?
No. Oh, the Mavarach, no. No, if he makes, that's the whole idea. You can make a regard for a kid to drink. Okay? Rav Lichtenstein feels that one could just take grape juice and use that for Havdalah. Because, as we said in Ikra Din, grape juice wasn't really included. It was just a minhag that got expanded. The Rav HaShulchan says the best thing to do is use Chamar Medina, which is an interesting point. In other words, beer and whiskey are not limited during the 9 days. Again, if you use beer or whiskey, you have to have a shir, a revius. But he says that that's the best thing to use for Havdalah. Okay, next.
Can you give it to your Svari friend?
Yeah, for sure. You can give it to your Svari friend. Next, Rechitza Shel Tanug. Rechitza Shel Tanug, pleasure bathing is prohibited during the 9 days. Pleasure bathing is also in, even in cold water. Doesn't make a difference, cold or lukewarm or warm, it's usur. It's also usur to shampoo one's head, even if he doesn't bathe his entire body. One is allowed to wash his hands, his face, and his feet with cold water. Okay? And one is not allowed to swim during the 9 days, because that's pleasure bathing. The only thing that was prohibited is pleasure bathing. And therefore, what are the heterim? Number one, if a person showers or bathes for the purpose of refuah, and refuah doesn't mean that you have to be a chole. Refuah could mean that if you don't bathe, you're going to get all kinds of itchy things all over your head or your skin. And if you're bathing in the water, not to start itching all over the place. That would be fine. If a person is sweaty, or not even sweaty, just smelly after a certain amount of time, and he wants a shower to remove the smell, that is not considered rechitza shel tanug. That's not pleasure bathing. In other words, you have a different purpose to the bathing, and therefore it would be mutter. One should preferably adjust the water so that he's not getting hanah from the heat of the water so much. You don't have to use cold water, but you know, what I'm trying to say is just like turn down the heat so you don't feel, oh, what a soothing, you know, hot shower. Okay? And likewise, if it's a really, really, really hot day and you're going under the shower just to cool off, that also is not worth it to do. And you should adjust the water if you're doing it to get off the smell or get off the sweat. So you should adjust it so that you're not enjoying the temperature of the water. Any questions? Swimming for instructive reasons, to learn how to swim, is mutter. Because again, it's not pleasure bathing. You're doing it for a particular purpose. Yeah. Parnasa. Your lifeguard. Your lifeguard. Lifeguards don't have to go into the water. If someone's drowning, you let it jump in at any point. Oh yes, that wouldn't be shultanug. In other words, that's not shultanug. Yes. Yes, you're allowed to put on the armor. Not on Tisha B'Av, but you're allowed to put on the armor on this. Yeah?
Swimming for exercise reasons, if you inherently enjoy swimming,
I think the proper thing would be to get in touch with your inner motive. You know, is the motive to exercise, to keep fit, and if you also happen to enjoy it, I think that's okay. But you know, if your main purpose is exercise, that's all right. The enthusiasts that, like, let's say, will swim three times a week, I think they're allowed to keep on swimming during the 9 days.
If it's really 50-50, if it really includes both cooling off after going to the gym and just exercising at pool.
Again, if you do it regularly, if you swim regularly for exercise, I think it's okay. If after the gym you're going to like convince yourself I'm doing it for, you know, to strengthen my heart, I think you might be fooling yourself. And you have to, you know what your real motive is. Yeah.
Could you do rechitzas tanug but not your whole body? You like wash your hands because it feels good.
Yes. I said hands and feet and face you're allowed to. Yes.
How long does she swim for on a regular basis in order to be something
you do? No. Again, it's your motive. It's your motive. Yeah. If you decide during the 9 days that, hey, my heart is weak and I might not live as long as I want to live, and from now on I'm going to swim, you know, four times a week, so you have to start during the 9 days. But that, your motive is that, and you obviously carry through. You know, like jump in, have a great time, and then quit. Yeah.
I always thought that swimming hydrates are common.
Okay. It's a good thing you came to the shiur. I don't think so. I can hear people saying that. I don't think it's crazy. I hear people saying it because, yeah, things happen. You know, but I don't think people look at it as a con.
I was told that most people, though I haven't seen this in writing, but where most clients think held that specifically for camps, that searing during the 90s are allowed because it was needed because the kids wouldn't be able to last long.
I'm not familiar. You could find it. I'm not familiar with it specifically with the length. Yep. So Rav Moshe Feinstein feels that you could take a hot shower if Rosh Chodesh falls out on Erev Shabbos, which happened this year. You could take a hot shower then. When we're talking about hot shower, again, we're talking about getting hana'ah from the water. And it's getting hana'ah from the heat. If you feel, and I think this is the Messias, that your body doesn't get as clean with cold water and soap as it would with warm water and soap, and your motive is to get the dirt off, so I don't think that that's a problem. I don't think that's a rechitza shultana. Yeah.
The
amount
of the 9 days in Shulchan, they don't end if after Tishlov they end the information.
Oh, when we talk about the host Tishlov, we'll talk about that.
The day after, right?
Yeah, it's not Motzei Tishlov. It's during Chatzor of the day. Okay. Yeah. You're asking, what if there's a special suit sale? I don't think you're allowed to. I don't think you're allowed to.
Buy other clothes.
Huh?
Buy other clothes.
Other clothes is okay. In other words, there's no issue of buying new clothes during the 9 days, other than the issue of Shachianu, which starts already for 3 weeks. You're not allowed to wear new clothes during the 9 days. But just to buy and not wear is not a problem.
On a date.
And let's say, as an example, just give another example, let's say sneakers, to buy, you know, sports shoes or whatever shoes. If you're on the Madrega where it's not a big deal for you and you wouldn't make a Shachianu on it, I'm glad that we don't make a Shachianu, but on sneakers, okay, you would make a Shachianu on it, so it would be mutter to buy and probably mutter to wear, because I don't think there's a din of freshly laundered clothes. Okay?
On a year like ours, he claimed that it's pushed off till Sunday. So then, Yud Alef Ba'av till Chatzos, is that still an issue?
No. It would probably be, in other words, on Sunday night, it would be okay. Great. Okay.